Blog Talk Radio.
Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio. The Jewels. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. I want to invite you all to Southern California, too, this coming November. Yep. Come join me on the first Law of Attraction Radio Network workshop cruise to Baja California. We're going to talk more about this later in the show, but it is an event that you will not want to miss, so stay tuned for more information. Tonight on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, we have entertainment tonight host Lisa Gibbons, who has her own daytime TV Emmy Award show called Lisa, and her own radio show called Hollywood Confidential in Los Angeles. Lisa will be talking about something that all of us have already experienced or will face in our lifetimes. That is of being a caregiver. We also have the executive director of Lisa's Place, Dr. Jamie Huntsman, and medical director Rosemary DeAngelis, who co-authored the book with Lisa, Take Your Oxygen First. It's going to be a great, great show, just full of information that you want to hear. And we're going to bring them on in just a bit. Hey, you know, I thought it was really interesting that last week, you may recall that I did the interview with the directors and producers of The Living Matrix. And it was great. I really enjoyed it. But I thought it was kind of strange that I found two newspaper articles this week talking about how there wasn't any scientific documentation that alternative medicine actually works. Huh? Wow, talk about trying to strip away personal power from the people. You know, the Associated Press author did not bother to contact the right scientists or really do research on the scientific explorations. Perhaps they would have found Dr. Bruce Lipton or Lynn McTaggart, who could actually show them the scientific documentation of the power of the individual mind on the body. And they have totally discounted any thoughts on energy that surrounds the body, which we know to be true. This just shows that there is another reason to stay tuned to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. You know, I don't wish to speculate, but perhaps the pharmaceuticals wanted to thwart any possibility of people learning how to not need drugs. You know, I have no idea why people don't want to do the research to find out what magnificent human beings we really are and how we can actually heal our bodies. I don't understand it, but I'm not going to worry about it. What I am going to do is keep on giving this information out to the world. And I hope you will help me do that by giving the Living Matrix DVD out to as many people as you can, or simply refer them to the website, which is www.thelivingmatrixmovie.com. We need to get this information out to the world because it shows the power of our minds and the alternative ways that we can take responsibility not only for our own health and healing, but for our entire lives. So help me. Remember the livingmatrixmovie.com. Great. Now let's hear these words from our wonderful sponsors. In today's world, more and more people are turning to the internet to make money. If you're serious about creating a new source of income, then make your website an easy site TheEasySite.com is even a great way to rejuvenate your existing website and increase traffic flow while maintaining the site yourself. It's easy. Attract new income your way with a professional website the easy way. Remember, TheEasySite.com. That's www.TheEasySite.com. Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires, by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Great, we're back. Now let's talk real fast about the November 6th cruise to Baja, California. This is going to be so much fun. We're in the midst of getting all the marketing materials together, but I got to tell you, this is so affordable, you are going to be amazed. Now, the majority of the Law of Attraction Radio Network hosts will be holding workshops on this 3-night cruise. Some of the hosts coming are spiritual healer and actress, you know her well, Dee Wallace. We also have singer and life coach Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt from the Snap Out of Show coming. And we have relationship expert Lisa Hayes. And we also have Larry Michael of Match Matrix coming on and telling us all about the energy in relationships. We also have psychic Jules Kennedy doing workshops and private counseling, as well as Sabrina Kinkle of Master Your Universe Show. And we also have educational expert Sandy Schwartz, who's going to be talking about leading edge parenting. And again, you'll want to talk to these people one-on-one. So catch the wave of transformation with us on Law of Attraction Radio Network Cruise. And if you want more information about this, go ahead and send me an email right now at jules@loaradionetwork.com. And I will get you information even before the marketing materials are out. But this is going to be a great time. And I can promise you, you are going to love it. Now, next week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, we're going to have author of Wagging Tales, Tim Link, joining us. And he is going to be taking all your calls about the issues surrounding your beloved pets. He has this uncanny ability to communicate with animals and even to find lost animals. So join us with your questions. Now, let's talk about a very, very important subject called caregiving. You know, I personally went through a time when my mother had Alzheimer's, and it wasn't until I read this book did I start understanding the dynamics of what happened in my family and how I personally reacted to my mother's illness. Wow. It was an eye-opener for me. Really brought me some clarity on things I really needed to understand. So I am so pleased to introduce Lisa to all of you. We've all known her for years and years. But what you may not know is Lisa's wonderful and moving story about her mother, Jean, who had Alzheimer's disease. Jean's request upon her diagnosis of Alzheimer's was for Lisa to get her story out, and that's just what Lisa did, thank goodness. From that came Lisa's Place, which is the place where caregivers can go to become educated, to be empowered, and to get the energy to continue to survive and take care of others. Currently, Lisa's Place is in 8 counties in the U.S., and hopefully, we're going to have them in every single county in the nation. This is exactly what we need. Along with Lisa today is Dr. Jamie Huntsman, who is a psychologist and clinical social worker. He is also a co-host with Lisa on Health Corner, a weekly show on Lifetime Television. Dr. Jamie is also the executive director of Lisa Gibbons Memorial Foundation, which houses the program Lisa's Place. And then we have Dr. Rosemary DeAngelis Laird, a physician and founding medical director of the Health First Aging Institute, located in Melbourne, Florida. Established in 2002, the Aging Institute sponsors clinics for geriatric consultation, memory loss, and primary care. Welcome, everyone, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Let me first start off by saying how impressed I am with the three of you. My goodness, the things that you have all accomplished.
Well, they are incredible, I must tell you, and they have done so much towards really marketing the aspect of these three E's, the education, empowerment, and energy, that's the core of our work and also so essential to supporting caregivers, whether you're dealing with memory loss or any chronic illness or disease. That's the go-to place.
As many of my listeners know, my mother died 3 years ago of Alzheimer's. When I read the book, Take Your Oxygen First, I was so thrilled at the clarity I gained after all this time. It was like a light bulb went off. I'm going, oh, so that's what happened. Now it makes sense. Had I only known about Lisa's Place back then.
Isn't that wonderful to hear, Dr. Jamie and Dr. Laird, that, you know, the reason for writing Take Your Oxygen First was exactly what you're saying, Jules, that it is such a universally common, and it's like the experience that we're all going to have, either having a caregiver or being a caregiver. And what we realized was, you know, no one should try this alone. It's like family first responders is what Jamie always says. You know, a caregiver is like that first responder when, you know, it's all breaking loose, the house is burning down, you know, the emergency is right there and people are fleeing from the scene. The caregivers, like the first responders, are heading towards that emergency. And our goal is to make sure that they are supported, that they're educated and empowered, and to remind them that it is essential. It's not a luxury. It's not an option. It is essential that they take their oxygen first.
Lisa brings up the question, though, that's most fascinating to us, I think, as we began this process 5 years ago. And we did not realize the challenges that we'd meet in terms of self-identification. You know, caregivers are disproportionately dying before their loved ones are dying. And in some wonderful sort of way, in their mind, they become martyrs. And they deal with a lot of the guilt, shame, and pain of their family of origin, their childhood issues. So they put their loved one first, as if that first one replaces everything and it's a be-all, end-all. So what Lisa was talking about with the family first responder piece was, you know, we have seen that our greatest challenge, I think, nationally and probably other organizations as well, is to have caregivers self-identify, to literally say, I am a caregiver, therefore I am a family first responder, therefore the, you know, clinical course of treatment I have to do is take care of my mind, my body, and my soul to replenish my energy for the journey ahead. Sometimes it's so culturally kind of pushed under the radar that nobody even knows that they are exactly a caregiver.
Well, that makes sense. Why the title, Take Your Oxygen First?
You want me? I'll take it and I'll give it to you all. Just you know, you fly in planes as well as your listeners do. And the first thing is that when the stewardess comes out and says, listen, you have to take the oxygen first, then give it to your loved one, usually a child, we all cringe. We cringe in a codependent way. How could I take it first? I have to give it to somebody else. But if you really look at the FAA and their guidelines, is you have about 19 seconds of useful consciousness. So that if the plane goes down and God forbid does that and you have any chance for survival, the person has to take it first. The child has a greater capacity, pulmonological capacity. And if you don't take it, you surely will die when and if you land it properly. So we had said, and take your oxygen first, that it was vital, just vital for caregivers to see that both Lisa's Place and taking care of their mind and body and soul is the useful consciousness, that they have to take care of themselves. So that as this whole process of caregiver and care receiver and sometimes crash and burning occurs, they then have the energy to go forward in this marathon, knowing it's not a sprint.
Jules, this is for us a rallying cry. It's a mantra. It's a movement, really, because caregivers are under assault. And I'll let Dr. Laird talk about the physical hits that you take. But, you know, it can take up to 10 years off your life because of your caregiving experience. So all the stress-related disorders, the compassion fatigue, the depression, you know, your body, your spirit, your soul, you are your immune system is being suppressed. So this business of taking your oxygen first means that you will not be a puddle on the floor. You won't be depleted. You know, if you don't nourish yourself, mind, body, soul, and spirit, there's nothing to give that caregiver. So to know that the way to, that care receiver, rather, to know that the way to love and to serve the diagnosed individual in your life is to first make sure that you are taking care of your own health. That's what we were going for. And Dr. Laird, you know, these are not these are very real physical side effects of caregiving, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. And from my vantage point, from the medical sort of perspective, I love the title because I often, when I'm giving talks, will ask folks to look at a picture of the heart, and I'll take them to medical school with me and explain that in the body, the way the heart reacts to taking oxygen from our system is a bit of what we want our caregivers to do. The heart's positioned right next to the lungs. As we take our deep breaths and get oxygen into our lungs, the very first organ that takes the most oxygen-rich blood from the circulation is the heart. So the heart knows that it has to fulfill its own needs in a slightly selfish way. It has to do that first so that it has the energy then to circulate that blood, that life-giving blood, to the rest of the body. And that's exactly that slightly selfish act that we need caregivers to do, is to realize that they need to do it.
You know, the esoteric side of us, I must throw it in for us, because with Lisa at the helm here and her non-traditional sort of approaches, which I think are vital for caregivers, what Dr. Laird is saying makes so much sense, and that is that the oxygen is the breath. And the breath that we take, and if you meditate or know meditation quite well, then you know the breath we take is the moment, and the moment, which is now. So what we try to get caregivers to do is to take the oxygen, which is concentrating on the moment, and let go of the fear of tomorrow or the anxiety of yesterday. And so the breath and the taking the oxygen truly, truly puts our 2 feet down on the ground instead of having us blow one way or the other towards fear and anxiety.
Well, I know my listeners subscribe to all of that. Lisa, you have a saying that I absolutely love, which is breathe, believe, and receive.
You know, we all need little reminders, really, of how to get through it. And the breathing part is so fundamental, and yet I think most caregivers are, you know I did. You breathe, and you probably experienced this too, Jules. You know, there's these shallow breaths because we're in a panic, because we feel not supported, or we feel not capable. We feel so much frustration, and caregivers tend to isolate.
Yeah.
So even just 10 purposeful deep breaths can reset you in terms of your intention and also your ability to withstand whatever is coming up next, and also inform yourself and just kind of get you ready. The belief part is what we learn every day from our caregivers at Lisa's Place. You know, my mother always believed in fairies and magic, and I don't care if it's prayer, if it's wishing on stars, you know, whatever it is that you believe in, now is the time to let those support systems work for you, and also to believe that you are enough, that you're going to get through it, that there are opportunities for you to model humanity for your kids, to model resourcefulness, to show your kids the beauty of needing other people, human kindness. They're to believe that all of those things will be richer because of the experience, and to receive from other people, you know, to open our hearts and open our hands. You know, we get so tensed up and we grasp things so tightly when we're, you know, kind of in combat mode, to sort of relax that open and say, okay, I'm going to be able to receive the help that was offered. I'm going to be able to receive the gift of being in this present moment, be able to receive the reality that I have to grieve and let go of, in our case, Jules, the mother that we once had, and recognize that I won't get her back, but I have to receive this new reality that, you know, this is where I am today.
Lisa, I wanted to talk about your mother. In the book, there's a section of scrapbooking that had pictures of your mother, and she is absolutely so beautiful. I can see a lot of you in her.
Oh, well, that's a lovely compliment. My mom was very, very vulnerable in many ways, but the thing that resonates to me about her was her strength, and I think it was her courageous strength and her insistence that we tell her story that really does kind of keep me going.
On your website, lisasplace.org, you state, "We get to decide who we want to be, how to co-create our experience, and announce to the world, here's the deal." I am assuming that you are placing the spiritual needs of a person on high priority.
Absolutely. I absolutely 100% agree. And that frame on the world really did come from my mom. You know, mothers are eternal. They don't stop mothering because their physical body has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the surprising things that happened when I lost my mom was I regained some of her. Her voice became even more powerful, her pre-diagnosis voice.
Uh-huh.
And I began to experience her before her sickness. So she was the one who always reminded the kids that, you know, decide, who do you want to be? How do you want to be in the world? You know, what is your character? What are your actions? Who are the people that are going to be around you? Because these choices are going to determine your life path and, you know, how you spend your time and, you know, who you love and how you show that love. That's who you are. And I think that's what's so cruel about memory loss is, and why people are so afraid of it, is, you know, we relate to ourselves based on this data bank of memories and recollections and
mm-hmm.
where did we go? What was our job? You know, how did we help people? When were we hurt? All those things, that's us. That's our soul print.
And Jules, there's a psychological sort of real journey here afoot that the listeners would love, and I know that Lisa downplays it a bit, but being a friend of hers and working with her for the past 13 years, you get this story, and the story is that Jean took Lisa across country, almost like a Thelma and Louise, and took her to Hollywood and basically said, look, you know, this is your deal. You know how to tell stories, and you're going to make it. And in some sort of metaphorical sort of way that continues the journey here, Lisa, who made the promise to her mom, and her mom was courageous enough to come on the Lisa show and announce that she had Alzheimer's, and her family has been courageous enough to open up, obviously, as you see through these pages, their lives, their depressions, their anxieties, their fears to us and to America, and that they now are, you know, mom carried them to a certain point, now they're carrying the promise from mom. And, of course, I still relate this because what I do now is also because my mom carried me to this point. And every time we open up Lisa's place, I look up to the heavens and say, Mom, there's another grandchild. So this is a kind of full circle and watching Lisa and her family and her mom and having the courage to open up this family to America, to allow Dr. Laird and myself to medically and psychologically and spiritually, you know, to talk and get inside this family because they're just like America's family, was such a grateful opportunity, I know, for Dr. Laird and myself.
Well, thank God for all of you. Lisa, your family was really close, your brother and your sister and your father. Give us an idea of what a typical family goes through when a loved one gets sick.
Well, we each interpreted it differently, which I think is what we see from our guest at Lisa's place. And I think, you know, as a mom, I saw each of my kids and my nieces and nephew also take a very individual journey towards acceptance and feeling our own power or lack of power as caregivers. For our family, you know, my place to hide was to get over busy. It's still the thing that I do. You know, some people drink, some people isolate, some people shop. you know, some people, we abuse ourselves in a number of ways when we don't want to feel something. For me, to deny what was going on or how afraid I was, I focused on, well, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to find a cure. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to access this expert and raise this kind of money. And there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. That's great. Those things can lead to wonderful opportunities for everybody in the world. What it did in my personal case, it took me out of, it caused me to lose even more of my mother, because we were losing more of her every day. And while I was so future-focused, I failed to see what she was able to do now and how I could celebrate her today. And so my sister, you know, had a different, first of all, she had, my mother always said, you know, when people ask who's your favorite child, you know, how does any mother answer that? Because your kids need different things at different times. And my little sister had a very different relationship with my mom. They were more like, we were all friends, but they were like sort of spiritual compatriots in a way. They were, they learned so much from each other and gifted each other. And so my sister, she just grieved from the very beginning and just felt so much immediate pain and darkness. And my brother wasn't able to feel it for years. So, you know, we did what we did. And at Lisa's place, when we dedicate ourselves to really empowering and supporting and offering these free services for caregivers, we recognize that wherever you are in your process is where we will meet you and where we will, you know, begin to, you know, hold your hand or encourage you or push you or wrap you in love or whatever it is that you need, because it's going to be individual and it's going to change from day to day.
You know, I remember the saddest day for me was when my mom walked up to me with a smile on her face and said, "Oh, you're so beautiful. What's your name? Do you live here?" And that feeling was so overwhelming, that loss. That's when I needed Lisa's place.
Well, you're so right, because when you're feeling, I mean, and that for a daughter, a husband, a wife, when you love someone so much, and they don't know you, boy, is that a rejection of the deepest kind. And all that, it's just, that's the most hurtful. I remember those moments, too.
Now, the beautiful part about what you just said, too, is that it is such a tragic thing to not just have them lose who you are or see these episodic behavioral outbursts or hear profanity from somebody who's never been profane in their lives. But the beauty, I think, of what Lisa's place is and why it really also would assist is that when you come in to be educated or empowered and energized through support groups, or you meet a mentor or befriender or somebody who is 5 or 6 years down the road who has seen those outbursts, who knows that the mom is going to lose the memory of the names, you meet this whole new kind of what we call family of choice. And it's not us that are doing the healing work. It seems to be the community that does the healing work for each other, just like in the AA model where the sponsors take care of the newcomers. They're now coming back, and they're actually saying, this is what you're going to see, and this is what we had to do, and this is, you know, the sort of tools and that they exchange among themselves as communities at Lisa's place.
You know, this might be the perfect time to give everybody the web address for Lisa's Place. So you can go to www.lisasplace.org. That's LEEZAS place.org. And you need to look at everything there: education, empowerment, and energy, the three E's.
It was purposely created in that way, that education would probably be the first thing that people would reach out for. You understand it's very difficult to reach out, especially in our society, and I would imagine other cultures too, because of the shame and stigma that's always seems to be associated with behavioral health, the stress, anxiety, fear, depression. These are the first things that people kind of go under the radar because they don't see the parity with medical care, which is unfortunate. So they reach out for education. And when they meet these people who are like them, there but for the grace of God go I, or, you know, loved ones from other families who have gone through that, they then become empowered and they start journaling and scrapbooking and doing memory television and picture yourself. And the beautiful part after they get empowered is the energy, which is more the absence or reduction of anxiety, that our bodies as caregivers, which are filled with anxiety, there is no room for energy. So as the anxiety leaves, through feeling safe, if you will, leaves this place and listening to education and empowerment issues, then energy returns for the marathon. And that's where we go to Dr. Laird, because she really has the medical sort of tie-in that sees how this energy now having it impacts the heart, the lungs, the eating habits, and they're all inextricably tied.
Okay, so they're all tied in together. Let's go into, and perhaps Dr. Laird can address this, what happens to a caregiver physically?
The education and empowerment and energy, that sort of structure working for you, we did look to use that as well to help people understand the impact on the caregiver's body, because a lot of times there wasn't an attention being paid to their own health. And so when I first started doing the lecture series that eventually became a lot of the information that's in the book now, it took a lot of education to open people's eyes to these issues. And Jules, I loved when you said after you read it, there was clarity in your mind about what it was that was happening to you as a caregiver and the risk that your body and mind was under. And I think that a lot of caregivers who are in the moment don't have that sort of knowledge. And so we do start all of the topics with a foundation of education. And in that part two that you're talking about there, caring for the caregiver's body, we do focus on a number of different things that, in a way, if you read the list, they're common sense things about taking care of ourselves: exercise, diet, sleep, maintaining your intellectual curiosity, your brain fitness. Those seem like, as I said, common sense sorts of things. But when you're in the midst of the chaos and the complexity of dealing with your loved one, they're very often the first things that kind of go and get put to the wayside. But what we do through the book is bring you back with that foundation of knowledge about what are the risks to you as a your body and your health over time as a caregiver of someone with really any chronic illness this material would be appropriate for. And then what we try to do is we work through each of those topics, and after you've had an education, we work to give you some ideas of ways that you can feel empowered and take some charge and take some direction to make a difference in your own life if you need to. And like Jamie said, hopefully then you find the energy. And with a lot of the things in Caring for the Caregiver's Body section, there is a direct relation to improved physical energy. Lisa referred to the immune system changes that can come about. Those are sometimes harder to understand, that you're improving your immune system. But really, everything we talk about as far as proper diet, exercise, getting the right amount of sleep, all of those things build up someone so that there is health and there is ability to withstand threats of illness or other chronic conditions that can come along.
Yeah, and Dr. Laird's approach to the body and taking care of our body and being advocates with doctors and making sure, don't forget the caregivers are most likely to get screened, because in taking care of a loved one, you have this vision of there, but for the grace of God, go I. This is a genetic, you know, predisposed condition possibly. It's a psychologically induced condition, what we're going through with the anxiety, and it's socially reinforced. So these are the most likely individuals in our healthcare system to deal with prevention and wellness. But if you take care of your body, and you take care of your mind psychologically, and you take care of your spirit, Jules, that's the antidote.
Okay, Dr. Jamie, it appears that guilt seems to be a common thread for all of the caregivers. Can you talk about this a little bit?
At Lisa's place, we deal with the self-esteem of caregivers. It literally is a burnout model, a compassion fatigue model for caregivers of all chronic illness. And once a person's self-esteem is more elevated, their guilt almost correspondingly drops. So we say psychologically, the higher the guilt, the lower the self-esteem. And the higher the self-esteem, the lower the guilt. So Lisa's place is a little bit between with Dr. Laird's approach to the body and our to the mind, and using the courage and the power of the Gibbons family and Lisa, it somehow allows people to self-identify, and then the milieu itself allows people to gain the self-esteem, which we hope lessens guilt.
What's so funny is people often don't realize that they're even experiencing guilt. So, again, a wonderful support system through Lisa's Place. Lisa, you had mentioned that you still feel like your mom is still around mothering you. In the back of the book, you talk about what happens to caregivers after their loved one transitions. Let's talk about that a bit.
You know, it's interesting for caregivers, especially like my dad, spouses, someone who is the full-time hands-on provider of that care, loses their loved one, and they also lose their job, you know, and their sense of identity. They've been doing this thing for years and years sometimes, and then it's gone. And there's grief, obviously, over the loved one, and there's grief over this changing role. I mean, it's like being fired and being left all at once. But, you know, with my personal experience, and my sister and I talk about this often, we are better able to replace the visual of my mom when she was sick with the images of our healthy mother as she kind of lives eternally in our hearts. And we always would tell the kids, you know, love is love and a heart never forgets. And it transcends the physical world. And that is, you know, ultimately we're, you know, nobody gets out of here alive. We're all going to expire. We're all going to cross over and experience whatever we believe is next or the end or, you know, our higher purpose or get our wings or however you see death. But, you know, when you losing someone to memory loss is like death in slow motion. Oh. It's like they die a little more every day. And the finality, waiting to get to the finality, you feel guilty because you pray for it to be over. You pray for them to be released. You feel bad for that. You know, it's that's what's so particular about memory loss and why it's especially difficult for caregivers and why of all the chronic illnesses and diseases, this is one of the ones right at the top in terms of causing the most potential damage to a caregiver's mental, physical health. My mom would be reminding me, first of all, that, honey, all you can do is all you can do. Your best is always going to be good enough because I was, you know, was and am one of those sort of chronic sort of let's regurgitate it and let's put it in the Cuisinart and see what we get this time. And, you know, well, I didn't do this and I failed to do that and it was okay but this. And so she would be reminding me it's perfect. You know, I used to laugh about the AARP, which used to stand for, of course, the Association of Retired Persons. But for me, it always stood for, you know, already perfect.
Oh.
And when I look at a lot of our caregiver stories, it's like if you can adopt that framework, which my mother could, to say, okay, oh, my gosh, my mother just been diagnosed with memory loss, there's problems in my marriage, my kids' grades are suffering, I've been asked to take a pay cut at work. Really hard to say, okay, perfect. But the reality is, it's perfect. And so I think that Mom would just be reminding me and us of that.
Well, that's something that we all need to be reminded of. And it seems like the three of you coming together have formed this perfect union in which to help many, many people.
Yes, you know, it's a three-legged stool here. Dr. Laird, as we had mentioned to you, is this Marvel's unsung sort of hero in this book writing campaign because she's so hypervigilant and dedicated. But if you also talk to her peers around the country of geriatricians, which I believe are really the future of the medical world as it pertains to the senior world, you'll also find that she's in high, high self-esteem from coast to coast. So I'm so fortunate to work with her and to have a messenger and a person so respected as Lisa, and then be able to get these behavioral health messages out that seem to be very difficult for people to take in and to understand and see as a part of their life. So this is basically a three-legged stool you have here, Jules.
So let's get into the medical aspect of everything. Tell me, Dr. Laird, is it me or is there more cases of Alzheimer's coming up in the world? Or is it that it's just being able to be diagnosed now?
It's really mostly that there's been more attention paid to it, we think, that the numbers seem to be increasing because we all know that many of our families have family lore that includes great Aunt Susie, who wasn't quite right in her later days. And many times it's likely that that individual was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, but it simply wasn't a diagnosis that was made in the past. It really has a it's been known as a diagnosis for a little over 100 years, and that's a relatively small chunk of time to have information about an illness. And another part of the challenge is that people haven't been living into the later ages in such large numbers at any time in history than what we're at now. So there is no time in the past where people survived into the 80s, 90s, 100s in great numbers, where you would see the impact of this kind of illness, someone living for 10, 20 years after a diagnosis of an illness made at 70. That's not something that happened until probably the last 50 years. So this whole phenomenon of Alzheimer's and its epidemic proportions, along with the parallel epidemic, if you will, of needing family caregivers, those are all very current dynamics in our world. And so that's partly why I think Jamie's right. There's going to come a time, I hope very soon, where we get more notice for that activity, because so many people are involved in it right now, and there really just aren't the type of resources people need.
Is there anything we could do to maybe not get Alzheimer's? Is there anything preventative that we can do?
Well, it's a great question. The evidence at this point, and you know, there's a lot out there that you can choose from, a lot of different brain exercises, a lot of things that are being sold as the answer and the secret to keeping Alzheimer's away in the form of exercises or products, different herbal remedies and things like that. But the best evidence exists for maintaining high levels of physical activity in your middle ages, and then as you get older, continuing throughout your older ages. That's got the best evidence behind it if you take large, you know, the traditional studies that we that get done to show, you know, what works and what doesn't, if you will. It's physical activity is the best evidence so far. And it links to circulation, and so keeping your circulation strong is really what they think is one of the keys to keeping your brain working well and aging well. You know, we're all subject to aging-related changes with our brain, and that's really where that senior moment stuff comes from. It's, it's age-related changes, which almost universally people have a slowing down of their memory retrieval, and so it can take you a little longer, even when you're older, to remember something that you need to remember. But it will still come back for the most part. Sometimes later on in the shower or when you're in the middle of the night, but it'll come back. That's almost universal. But when you start having changes of memory that are more severe, that's when you've crossed into the memory loss related disorders that we talk about.
Dr. Jamie, will our emotional well-being play a role in preventing Alzheimer's or memory loss, or aging for that matter?
You're really dead on. I think it's a deeper sort of answer. And there's no doubt that when we manifest and we're very, very positive, and if you will, we go back to the self-limiting beliefs that we gained as a child, that we have to seemingly divest ourselves to be able to, you know, live in peace with ourselves and to go forward with very much this powerful intention and of attraction and allowing things to come to us. The byproduct of all of that is a clearer mind and an ability to concentrate and the ability to show up in one's life without having to feel the fears of tomorrow or the anxieties of yesterday. So this whole process, this positive psychology process, and I'm not talking just smearing it on top of negative thinking. I'm talking about really going deep and deepen into maybe the wound and being able to open it and suture it, the darkness, and coming together with that darkness, almost in a yin-yang way, that creates, I think, a much clearer mind. However, what I'd like to bring up, too, because as a psychologist, I'm not just only from that Jungian sort of esoteric world, which I believe in deeply, very deeply. I'm also of the biological world. And I believe that with caregivers, we have a disproportionate amount of depression and actually not diagnosed depression, which is really sadder because we have come very, very far in psychopharmacological remedies and cognitive remedies. But if we can't identify it with, you know, family practice doctors or GPs, then how can we treat it? I do believe that sometimes the memory disorders, and I'm sure Dr. Laird is much more qualified to take on this sort of segue, that the memory disorders can be sometimes often confused with the symptoms that surround clinical depression. And you understand that many times it's not a memory disorder that brings us into the assessment and evaluation process. It's the cognitive sort of fog, it's the low feelings of sadness and despair, but that's more or less associated also with undiagnosed depression. So getting to the doctors through CMEs and getting through the public, that may well not be a dementia or memory issue, it may well be a depression issue, is something I know that Dr. Laird understands better than most.
Wow. Right. Oh, definitely. And I've got 2 points on that. The depression can precede the change or precede the diagnosis of memory loss. It's quite a high rate if someone hasn't had a history of depression in the past. And very often after I'll be talking to families after we've made a diagnosis, they'll reflect back on the 2 or 3 years preceding the time they noted change, and they'll say, you know, now that you ask about it, I recall that they were showing different signs of things that we would call depression. So there's that situation. But what Jamie's also referring to is that in some cases it can be depression itself that is causing the memory change, and the specific treatment of the depression is what can lead to improved mental abilities. And it isn't always a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease that you end up with after that.
Mm.
And I guess the other point I want to make on this topic is that if there is one area where caregivers will sometimes step out of the caregiving role and talk to me about themselves, it's with their own memory. So I'll be seeing a patient and their caregiver's there with them, and very often the topic never turns to how the caregiver is doing. But if it's going to, the one thing they always say to me is, you know, I'm just feeling like my own memory is not sharp. And very often when I then talk to the individual about that, very often there is depression also going on about their situation. And it's a very common combination for caregivers specifically to have a certain amount of depressed feelings and then to have that impact their day-to-day ability to function intellectually. And it scares caregivers quite a bit because they realize they're the ones who really have to stay strong.
Yeah.
So this is especially worrisome to my older caregivers who start to really worry about themselves.
Prevention and wellness comes in so importantly, too, because the prevention and wellness says get an early assessment. Get to somebody who can actually see red flags, because depression could be situational. It could be endogenous or clinical, or, you know, the DSM-4R, which is our Bible of diagnostics that we reimburse under, will state that if certain conditions, certain behavioral symptoms exist for 2 weeks or greater, then you need to look at it. And then to look at it means get an assessment and evaluation. Because, you know, loss is the greatest trigger of depression, of mm-hmm. anxiety. And we are looking at impending loss, and there is a lot of the mully grubs and the demons and the ghosts that pop up through this. So we really have to ascertain if this is, and then people isolate, which I call the caregiver cancer of their own souls, is isolation. So if we had a medical community, certainly if we had Dr. Laird out there teaching all the doctors who I know desperately need it, where you can actually separate and ascertain the clinical depression, the situational depression, you know, and the ability for people to feel that they can go reach out to their physician for these assessments without shame or stigma, I think we'd be way ahead of this game.
So we do have a chapter in the book that deals with finding help and creating your set of help around you having to do with the medical care. Because Lisa often will talk about one of the biggest challenges and frustrations her family had. And I heard this from every one of them. I was privileged enough through the course of the book to be able to meet each of them. And one of the things they all said, they all echoed each other, was how frustrating it was until they had a medical team around them that they could count on to help them through. Mm-hmm. They struggled in the early days of getting a diagnosis and then understanding the diagnosis and what to do from there. It took a while for them to get that, and that was one of Lisa's motivators for Lisa's Place. So we spend a lot of time there trying to make sure that people do have a medical team around them that can help support them, because as we've referred to, that foundation of knowledge, that education, is such a powerful part of being able to feel confident as you move forward making decisions about your loved one or yourself, that if you don't have that from a medical standpoint, you're really in trouble.
Great point. What can caregivers do as far as alternative medicine? I see from the book that you're very much into alternative medicine.
You know, it's not as alternative as one thinks. We're also about touch. We're about connection. Again, you see caregivers who isolate, who haven't been hugged, haven't been touched, who often feel detached. And it leaves this place. It's odd, but some of our most successful days are our wellness spa days, where we do massage and we do Reiki all the time. And we do Tai Chi. I think there's a thirst and a hunger among certainly caregivers, and I say especially seniors, for this powerful energy. I see that it reduces fear, you know, false evidence appearing real is the acronym. It reduces fear. And when you see them working with their chakra work in their Reiki circles and being attuned, and they're 80 years old and 85 years old and just walking out in this kind of meditative gaze saying, wow, there's something greater than just this fear I walked in with. Then we're always very happy at Lisa's Place. We're very much non-traditional in a lot of our approaches. I remember we just did a fantastic beauty day here in Fort Lauderdale, Lisa's Place, where 17 beauticians from the Paul Mitchell Schools came down and did everybody's hair and makeup and pedicures and manicures.
Oh, wow, that's so wonderful. What's the future hold for Lisa Place? Are you going to get one in every city in the U.S.?
Well, God willing, and the creek don't rise. How's that? We see there's with this partnership with, obviously, I keep thinking is my medical inspiration, Dr. Laird, and who keeps driving us both in Melbourne and on a national basis to do better. We just know that one needs to be in every county across the country. We also know that access has to be provided to those people who are isolated and rural, going through their own hell and shame. And so we're developing a national caregiver teleconnection, which is a telecollege or university. People can pick up the phone anonymously. And we also know that we need a lot of new evidence-based research because there's really a dearth of behavioral research about caregivers. Caregivers are the decision-makers of society today. And the reason why Lisa is so effective and we are so fortunate to have all three of us working together is that the daytime viewing audience is disproportionately women. And caregiving has unfortunately been dumped into women's laps and has been accepted in a way that, you know, Mother Teresa initially accepted her powerful work in India. But when Mother Teresa's second book came out, questioning her life, questioning her faith, questioning, that was the quintessential caregiver piece. So there are 50 million in the country. There soon will be 80 million as Medicare drops. And what do you say, Rosemary? Should we go for one in every county?
Absolutely. I mean, my world is in part so focused on seeing patients who have not had, and their caregivers who have not had good guidance through this very complicated chronic illness. And sadly, I know it's true of other chronic illnesses. So I do a lot of Alzheimer's work, but I also see patients with stroke, I see patients with MS, I see patients with other chronic illnesses. And so this isn't just unique to Alzheimer's disease. But going back to what I said earlier about them getting the medical team around people, resources are limited in all our communities, and so I really like the ideas that, Jamie, you've brought forward about the teleconnections and figuring out ways to get this kind of information out to more people so that they can start asking and seeking out information, because there aren't enough geriatricians in the world. There aren't enough trained Alzheimer's specialists in the world, but if we can start to connect them via the power of the web and other telecommunication, I think that's really valuable. I tease Lisa that she, at one of her first press releases about Lisa's Place, she famously announced that she wanted to have a Lisa's Place in every county in the United States within, I think it was 10 years, right, Jamie?
That it was, Doc.
Some fatigue-inducing pace. But so now I tease her that we're not at the 10-year mark, so we still have time to go, but we now have an opportunity to have the book, which is certainly not a Lisa's Place, but it's a good start for anyone who is in this predicament. And, so that is something that we could, through use of our friends and the networks of people that I hope will be talking about this in increasing numbers, that I hope we can get to every county in the country. Because I really do think, I hope it brings them as much clarity as it brought you, Jules, so that they feel comfortable asking the questions and starting to look for the help that they will need and their loved one will need to get them through.
Yes, and I also want to remind everyone, and Lisa mentioned this, Dr. Laird mentioned this, it's just not about Alzheimer's. It's any kind of caregiving. It could even be for a child that's ill. You know, sometime in our life, we're going to be a caregiver, and we all need to know this information and where to go to get even more.
All right, that's well said.
Well said. And don't forget, if you're not a caregiver of somebody, you soon will be, as well as if you're not getting care, you soon will be. And the most important thing is that we have to caregive our soul. And that's really where it all starts. That's where our mind and body and health comes from. Therefore, we can make this journey. So you are a caregiver today and of this moment, of yourself, of your soul. And without being that first and foremost, I don't think caregiving is really possible in a real qualitative way.
Oh, yes. It is the caregiving of ourselves. Very, very good. Wow, this hour has flown by. I can't thank you all enough. It's just been wonderful. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Dr. Laird. Thank you, Dr. Jamie.
Well, the thanks goes to you, Jules, and the fact that you have experienced it and that you have attracted this professional opportunity and this platform into your life is really meaningful to us. And my co-authors and friends, Dr. Jamie Heisman and Dr. Rosemary Laird, have an opportunity to cross the country and on a daily basis, and they see what you see, which is this incredible need. And so we are so dedicated to encouraging your listeners to take their oxygen first. And please go to the website. Please check out what we're doing at Lisa's Place and find out how we can be of service in your life or how you can be part of what we're doing.
And Jules, can you imagine just for a moment, since this is a wonderful show and it's about attraction, can you imagine Lisa in a couple of years with about a million caregivers on the Washington Mall all saying take your oxygen first and all advocating to change Medicare so that we can actually make purposeful sort of support systems for caregivers? And can you imagine Lisa in front of the House of Representatives and the senators and the million people outside who probably will be 50 million in number by the time this day occurs, saying, what about us? Where do we figure in this healthcare process?
Oh,
Lisa's such a wonderful chairman of the board, but really a leader, I think, and a lightning rod intergenerationally for this movement. And so we're really blessed, obviously, to be working alongside of her. And I think that you're going to see huge things in the years to come.
Well, so, okay, well, the Jamie's right. Let's get everybody listening. Then we'll all set our vibrational energy. And that day is coming. It's coming very quickly because, you know, this is a collective that doesn't yet have the voice and the organization that it needs to have. And, you know, look at the wave. Okay, so it's our parents. You know, we are going to be the next ones to be receiving all these services. Unless we do recognize that, as you started our conversation, Jules, by saying we can co-create how we want to define ourselves as caregivers, and we can decide and ensure that that is vibrant, empowered, that we are physically, mentally, spiritually robust, so that we can give all the love that it is our pleasure to offer out into the world. So we thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for the platform and the ability to be able to talk about, I think, what is extraordinarily important that Dr. Laird says, which is if you can't get a Lisa's Place in your area, grab the book. It's the essence of why we're trying to do what we're doing.
Okay, my wonderful listeners, let's not keep this information just to ourselves. Let's share it with people who really need it. Get the word out and go to Lisa'sPlace.org. Thank you all so much. Thank you for joining us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. For more information, go to Law of Attraction Radio Network at lawofattracttalkradio.com or lawofattractiontools.com.